Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
What beautiful music, gorgeous music. It always is gorgeous music when we're talking about what we're about to talk about. But first, let me say welcome to the podcast, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Curtain. I'm Paul Lisnick, and today we are going to be talking about a show that, if you haven't seen it, you better see it. You have until July 6th, and it's absolutely amazing. It is called Volta, but if that's not familiar to you, you may be more familiar if I say Cirque du Soleil, because it is Cirque du Soleil's latest show in Chicago. It is called Volta. It is the 25th production, I believe, that's come to Chicago from a group that had its birth in Canada, travels the world in so many places permanently, but we're so thrilled when it comes to Chicago. Let's talk about it. Joining me is the senior publicist for the show, Stephen Ross. He comes from Montreal, as we might say in French. And so, Stephen, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And Darren Trull, who is one of the performers in the show, he works the straps. We'll ask him what that means. He is a Torontonian, also a Canadian, but I'm sure he is enjoying life in Chicago now. Darren, welcome, and I guess I'll ask you that first. You enjoying your time in Chicago?
Yeah, how are you doing? I'm loving it here. It's a beautiful city. Reminds me a little bit of Toronto, so I feel like home a little.
Yeah, you know, I actually agree with you. The first time I went to Toronto, I remember thinking to myself, you know, Toronto was like a, with all due respect to my own home, a cleaner, more pristine Chicago. It just kind of notched up the cleanliness a little bit, but it very similar, I think, in culture here. So, Stephen, Volta is the 25th Cirque du Soleil performance. What is it about Cirque du Soleil in general that just people find mesmerizing? I do. It's mesmerizing. It's so engrossing. But every show is different. So talk to me about the magic of Cirque du Soleil and a little bit about the plot of Volta.
Well, as you mentioned, the company is Canadian. It started about 35 years now ago. And the idea was to go with a circus with no animals, to take circus to a different place and really put the emphasis and the highlight on the human talent and human performers. So basically go bring the human body to another level. So this year is the 30th anniversary of Cirque du Soleil visiting Chicago. As you mentioned, there was 25 shows coming here. Volta is really now taking circus disciplines as well to another level. What is it in 35 years we haven't done yet? What is it we haven't presented on a stage? So the idea came that we never actually created a show tailored and centered around street sports. So that's what we decided to do with Volta. We took this sports like BMX, like rope skipping, if you will, or roller skate, from the street onto the stage. So that's the first time we ever do that. And the result, I think you've seen the show. I think in my view, is pretty amazing.
I have seen the show, and it is amazing. And Darren, there is actually, you know, I'll be honest, when I watch the show, I just take it all in. And I was a little bit stupid because the person I was with said, boy, that was a really interesting plot. And I said, plot? I said, I just loved what I saw. He goes, well, yeah, there's a story there. So tell our listeners, there is a plot to Volta, and talk about what the story is that's being told.
Yeah, like most Cirque shows, the stories can be not as evident to some people as, but for our show, I feel like it's definitely there with the journey of Waz, our main character, finding his free. So he has blue hair. He feels a bit different than everyone else surrounding him. And at the beginning of the show, he's sort of self-conscious about that. It's this journey of him being comfortable with that, being comfortable with himself, and finding his free and being proud of who he is.
And Darren, talk to me a bit about, you do the straps. So for folks who have not seen the show yet, they may not know what that's a reference to. What does it mean to work the straps?
So it's an aerial act, pieces of fabric that are tied around one or two of our wrists, and a lot of flying out over the audience. And Upper body strength, a lot of upper body strength.
Which is why you'll never see me do it. And so the thing about what I notice about Cirque performers is because most of these people, Stephen, they're not as though they come from Broadway and then come to you. These are people whose background, whose training is in acrobatics and gymnastics. I mean, these are physical athletes who have to have this sense of performance about them, right? Would that be true, what you're looking for in the audition process, Stephen?
Well, 30% of the staff, the artists from Cirque, come from circus disciplines. We also have 30% who come, as you mentioned, from theater, so Broadway or music or dance or other form of arts. And we have 30% from sports. So on Volta, because the show is about sports, we have a lot of people who have this background. Artists like Darren, for instance, have more gymnastic and more circus background. And we have a lot of dance as well in the show. So we have a lot of people coming from musical theaters as well, backgrounds.
And Darren, to do what you do, so by the way, your background is gymnastics. When you auditioned for Cirque, what had you been doing? What gave you the thought to say, this is the place for me to exhibit my skills?
Actually, I saw my first Cirque show when I was about 8 years old. My dad took me in Toronto, and since then, that was always my goal. But yeah, I was a gymnast for about 15 years. But on the side, I was always studying acting and movement and performance as well. So this always interested me to be a performer. So coming into the audition, I had a bit of a leg up, I guess, against a lot of other people that come straight from acrobatics, where you're, especially gymnastics, is a very solo sport where you're just trying to get the best score. So to turn that around and project yourself out to an audience can be intimidating to a lot of athletes. But Cirque does a great job in taking us from sport and kind of giving us that knowledge and teaching us to project that to the audience and have fun out there.
Which is true. And also, Stephen, is it true that, by the way, I did what you all call the VIP tour, which was a chance to experience, really, I encourage anybody who can do it to do it, because you're in kind of a special place beforehand with drinks and food and all of that. But I'm not even saying it for that. It's because afterwards, I had the opportunity, as well as the backstage piece of it, to meet some of the performers, go backstage, see where they dress. Many of them were still there after the show, working out or changing or getting dressed. And we got a chance to chat with them. Everybody was so nice. But Stephen, one of the things that's interesting that I came to learn is that if I were to see Volta in another location, it might not be exactly the same. It'll be similar, but not exactly, because you have to also play to the current, to the particular talents of the performers who are in that show, right? So you might have somebody performing that hair thing where they hang by their hair, but you might not have that in another location if you don't have someone with that skill. Is that true?
Well, all the artists, we have about 50 artists on Volta, and they all travel with the show. So the artists you would see in Chicago, you will see them in D.C. as well when we're going there in July. But there's no such thing as freezing a show in circus. You were referencing to Broadway before. When you do a musical theater, you want to freeze your show as soon as possible and present the same version every night. In circus, certain things might happen, and there's always slight differences every night. You've seen we have a terribly amazing hoop diving, shape diving number in Volta. So if ever one of the performers, for example, doesn't perform the routine perfectly as he would have to do it, and hit the hoop, for example, he's going to present the retry his trick. So that's something that would be a bit different than the night before. And the reason why we say it's always different is the music is live as well. So when something like this happens on stage, that's not exactly the same thing as yesterday. The band has to adapt and has to follow what's going on stage. So if you look at Broadway, for instance, they put a song on and then the performers learn the track to the song. When you're in circus, the performers are the leader of the act and the band follows what the performers do. So the song is always slightly different as well.
Go ahead.
I was saying, you were talking about our hair suspension artist, for instance. That's mind-blowing, absolutely stunning number where Danila Bim, our Brazilian artist, she actually levitates 25 feet in the air, suspended only by her hair. If she was sick, for example, she had a cold or something one day, she could not be there. We have a backup act that could be presented in the show to replace the number and to present something of the highest quality to make sure the experience is the same for the guests. If someone like our main act, for instance, who does one that Darren was talking about, could not be there one day. We have an understudy, a performer that could replace him, because this character is key to the plot and cannot be out of the number. So there's always changes here and there, the same way we would see in a theater production.
And Darren, and by the way, Darren, I imagine you could do the hair thing if she was off, right? You'll just step in for that?
Yeah, of course. I just have to grow my hair a little bit longer.
I just thought I would check. You know what I found interesting? That the act performers I met, there were some from Asia and Brazil and literally all over the world. But am I correct that initially not everybody might speak English, but they do learn English to be in the show? Is that true? Or are there some who work with translators? Darren.
Yeah, at the beginning, if someone's from another country, then we have translators that help them, especially at the studio when they first come to Cirque. It's kind of the beauty of working for Cirque, getting to work with so many different cultures, but it's unbelievable how fast everyone seems to learn English backstage. It's definitely part of the circus culture, I guess, probably in any circus. So English is kind of the main language that we tend to use, but it's an impressive thing that how quick everyone seems to learn English.
And do you find, do they become your world? Do you socialize, go to eat? Is that because you spend so much time, and I know that you're well-fed back there, they take care of you, great space, work out and all that. Do you find, does that become your family, essentially, Darren?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a big extended family. We spend not only so much time together at work, but we travel together. We tend to live, sometimes in the same hotels for extended periods of time. But then on top of that, we have each other's lives in our hands and trust each other at work. So that bond that gets created between artists with that, is pretty substantial.
And by the way, I think I learned a new term when I was there. Am I right? You call the trailer that is the restroom, you call the 22? Is that the number?
Yes, that's the number.
Yeah, I use that at home now. I just talk about using the 22. See, Stephen, I paid attention to that tour. I paid very close.
This number comes from the fact that we have about 70 trailers transporting 2,000 tons of equipment all together on the site. And in order for us to know what's in which trailer, they all have a precise number. So 69, for instance, is our office trailer, and 22 is the loo. And it's the same code for any Cirque du Soleil show across the world. So if Darren was to work on a show that's in Australia tomorrow, well, the technical guy would know that in the trailer 54 is where he can find the lights and the music and all the props equipment. So it's kind of a code, and it became an inner family code as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let the fact that the two numbers you picked were 22 and 69, I'm going to let that go right now. My mind went in many places. So, Stephen, let me also ask you, the setup is amazing. You know, when you're there, it talks about you're under the tent, the big tent. And, of course, that's the circus feel to it. But it's an amazing thing. How long does it take? It takes days to set it up. You're only here till July 6th. Do they take that whole thing down and move it on to the next city, Stephen?
So we're starting on 26th of July in D.C. and we're finishing here on the 6th of July in Chicago. That's our annual leave, so it's a very long period. Normally that happens once a year. Normally there's 10 days in between cities. So for the whole Cirque du Soleil village to be up, it takes about 6 days for the site to be up. But that we need about 10 days from the last show in Chicago to the next show premiering in the next city. And for the whole site to be down, it takes 2 days altogether. So people who will see the show on this at 5 p.m. on the 6th of July, they'll see the last performance in Chicago. And as soon as the people are out, we start tearing everything down. And by Tuesday, we're out of the site already.
Wow. And then, Darren, for you, that's vacation time then, right? As the show breaks down in one location, sets up in another?
Yeah, we all can either choose to travel with the tour, or we can take that time and go visit family or go relax on a beach somewhere and let the body rest a little bit.
Ah, perfect. You'll stay in Chicago, though, during this next break, I hope, right?
Well, hopefully the weather gets a little bit better, and then, yeah.
Yeah, we have two seasons here, winter and not winter. Those are the two we get. We never know what the other one is. Well, Cirque du Soleil Volta, playing under the big top at Soldier Field. couldn't be easier to get to. Parking is there. That was my concern, actually. I wasn't sure about parking, but parking is there. It's not a problem. It's very easy. The show is incredible. I really encourage you to check out the VIP experience if you can. It is worth it. Private area to have some nice food and drinks, open bar and desserts in the intermission. And they really treat you well. And then you go in, you see the show without having to go outside anymore. And then and afterwards, the experience of being able to meet some of the cast members and walk backstage. It's just the full... Stephen, I think the goal for the people who take that part of the evening and go the VIP route, it really is to give you the immerse you in the experience as close as you can get. We pretty much do everything except perform on stage.
So the package you're referring to is the behind-the-scene encounter that happens every Friday night only.
Oh.
And the portion guests would like to be to experience that. Yes, they actually, I'm the one who's doing the tour. I wasn't there the day you came, but usually it's myself. So we take all the guests for a one-hour facility tour before the show. We take them where only the staff has access. You go into the big top, you go into the backstage, you go into the kitchen, you see really what it is like to be among the people who work on a tour. And after the show, as you said, you meet the artists, get to ask their questions, to interact with them, take photos, and you finish off the night in the artistic tent and the wardrobe area, which is pretty spectacular if you've never seen that.
Oh, yeah. And you find out about the 22. That's how I learned. Well, to get tickets, you only have till July 6th. I mean, this really is an outing for the family. The night I went, by the way, Sean is the one who did the backstage tour. I hope he gave you my regards. And the night I was there, our executive producer for the morning show, she was there. She fell in love with it. And in fact, just the other morning, you were on our morning show here at WGN as we covered it there. So to see Cirque du Soleil's Volta is to fall in love with it. And if you don't see it, you will be sorry that you missed it, because you, Stephen, you may or may not know the answer to this, but when is the next time we would expect a Cirque du Soleil show to come to Chicago?
I don't have the answer to this, but what I can say is that normally the big top shows stay about 2 to 3 years in North America, and Alegria is a new production big top that was launched in April in Montreal. So if we compare to other tour productions, it could be possible that Alegria comes to Chicago sometime in the next 2-3 years. But right now, there's no announcement yet for Chicago for a new production. So you have to come and see Volta.
By the way, is it a new... Alegria is one of the first Cirque shows I saw. That, to me, the one... I mean, I have a lot of Cirque du Soleil CDs of music, but Alegria was the most beautiful music, for me, of all the Cirque shows. I absolutely loved it. So is that the same Alegria from many years ago coming back, or is this a revised Alegria?
It's a revived Alegria. It's basically the same, but they brought it back to the 2019 touch, if you want. And it's the first time in the history of Cirque that they bring back a big top for a second time. Usually the show go around the world on the big top for about 7 to 10 years. Sometimes the show will be revamped and brought into arena, where they're going to tour the world for about a year and a half to 3 years, and that would be it for a show like that. But Alegria, upon 25th anniversary, they decided to do something they've never done before, and to bring the show again into big time, because, as you mentioned, it was such an iconic success and something people keep asking and asking and asking to see again. So the show is touring again.
Oh, yeah. Great music. But anyway, we'll worry about that when it gets here. For now, go see Volta. You can get tickets at CirqueDuSoleil.com/Volta, V-O-L-T-A, out at Soldier Field. Only through July 6th. As Stephen told you, 5 p.m., the final show, and things come down. There will not be an extension. Darren, if I have a chance, I'll come by, and you and I can do some gymnastics on the strap some evening. But don't wait for me. promise you, don't wait for me.
Nope.
But anyway, it's a great show, everybody. I want to thank you, Stephen Ross, Darren Trull. Look forward to seeing you perform, Darren. And we're going to go out with a little more music from Volta, just so people can hear just how beautiful it is. Thank you, guys. Here's a little more from Volta. And let's take a look now outside the world of Cirque du Soleil in Volta and go to one of the Chicago area's great treasures, the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. It's up in Skokie, where I grew up. And when I was a little kid, it was Kittyland over there. But now you can see live theater at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. And joining me is Michael Paulkin. He is the general manager of that theater. And Michael, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate that. You got some great stuff going on up there.
Yes, we do. We're actually quite busy this summer. We are doing a 3-show summer theater series in our smaller space, which is during most of the year home to Northlight Theater, but they are usually quiet in the summer. And so we are bringing three plays in beginning next week with Wiesenthal, which is the story of Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal.
And let's talk about that. I want to talk about each of these separately if we can.
Okay.
And so this play, by the way, I call it Wiesenthal. I think that, you know, but either one probably works. But so it stars Tom Dugan. It was written by Tom Dugan. And I have a memory that this played like a year or two ago. Is that right? It was here before, but for like only a couple performances.
Yeah, it actually hasn't even been that long. It was less than a year ago. And we only brought it in. We brought it into our larger theater just for a couple of performances on one weekend. It was so well received, and it has continued to tour all over the country. And we just sort of felt like more people needed to see it. And since our smaller theater space is available this summer, we're bringing it in. We're just routed nicely, and we're bringing them in for six performances this coming week.
And this is so Wiesenthal, a play about Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal. That's what it's about. But there actually is, for people who don't know who Wiesenthal is, I mean, he was a Holocaust survivor. He spent the rest of his life. He died a few years ago, I think it is now, but spent the rest of his life working to bring over 1,000 Nazi war criminals to trial, to justice. This is what he devoted his life to. In fact, actually, on my politics show, Politics Tonight, from time to time, my listeners who watch my show will also know we have somebody from the Wiesenthal Center on the show. So it's the same guy, the same person we're talking about. But this show, Michael, actually, it's not a tragic show. I mean, this show has a bit of humor to it as well.
Well, yes, because he was a very he had a good sense of humor himself and was a very witty person. And so we basically watching the play, we are in his office in Austria while he is packing it up for retirement. And so there's a lot of obviously reminiscing, looking back, telling stories. But because he was such a witty person, you just enjoy his company so much. And aside from that, I find it a very a sort of uplifting show because it speaks to the power of what one person can do to change the world. He did devote his whole life to bringing Nazi war criminals to justice. He found Eichmann and so many others to bring them to justice and. But this is one person working out of this office in Austria that did this, and you start to realize that we can all do our bit to make the world a better place.
And you are right. I remember he did locate Adolf Eichmann. He also found a Nazi named Karl Silberbauer. He was the guy who arrested Anne Frank and her family. So Wiesenthal had some stories to tell. Now I don't know whether you know the answer to this, but did Tom Dugan, the playwright, did he meet Wiesenthal? Is some of this based on discussion with him, or was it simply based on memoirs and writings of Wiesenthal?
To the best of my knowledge, it was based on history and memories. I know we do a talk back after every performance with Tom Dugan, and in fact, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, which you mentioned, is coming with three people, three different performances. They'll have somebody with him as well for the talk back. And this is, of course, a fascinating thing. But Tom speaks about how his father was one of the soldiers who liberated, and I don't remember which concentration camp, but he was there at the end of World War II serving in Europe, and that sort of fed his desire to tell the story.
Wow. This is playing June 26th through June 30th, and I think another reason among many to see this, aside from Tom's incredible performance and the history being told, and the reason the Wiesenthal Center has been on my show is because this is not history. I mean, this is history, but we're living a version of this history today, and I'm so glad you're doing the talk back because obviously that has to be rich in a discussion of how the things that Wiesenthal and those like him fought against are rearing their head again today.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that's one of the reasons we're doing this show. One of the reasons we did it the first time, one of the reasons we're bringing it back. I mean, it hasn't been that long. There was a candidate on one of the major political parties for, I think it was either Congress or a statewide.
Third District of Congress, yes.
You know, who is a professed Nazi. I mean, it's like, you know, it's unfortunately very relevant today. And one of the things that this Wiesenthal tour just did, they just did a benefit in Pittsburgh for the Tree of Life Synagogue. I mean, you know, it's like we just have to keep telling the stories. We just have to.
Very true. So I encourage people to see that. And again, it's only six performances, so you do not want to miss that show. And then following that, July 5th, so just a few days after Wiesenthal closes up, this I found fascinating, a show called Hitler's Tasters. It makes me think, oh, if only they had let him eat whatever was in that food. I don't know. But talk to you about the folks who make up the cast of Hitler's Tasters and a bit about Michelle Kolos's Brooks script.
Yeah, so this is a play that was premiered last fall in New York, ran, I think it was a relatively short run.
Off-Broadway,
A month or two off-Broadway, correct. Was very, very well received and sold out its run there. They've been juried into the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and so they were looking for a new place to do the show, like remount it, so to speak, before they travel over to Scotland. And the producer of Wiesenthal happens to be the father of the playwright for Hitler's Tasters. So there was a little bit of a connection there. And we, again, have this theater in the summer that is often underutilized. So we decided we're the perfect place to do this. The play, it's a little piece of history that I was unfamiliar with, that there were these young women, practically teenagers, conscripted to taste Hitler's food before he ate his meals. And so that's the basis of the true story play. And what Michelle Kolos Brooks, the playwright, has done is contemporarized these characters. And what that does for the audience is it brings it home in a very visceral way what it would be like to be in their position. You know, literally for an hour or so after every meal, three times a day, not knowing whether you were going to live or die, and what that does to your psyche. But by contemporizing the characters, you know, these could be our daughters or our sisters or what have you, in sort of that present day. So it's definitely a little bit of I guess you could say almost like a little bit of a time variance there within the play. It's just fascinating. It's a fascinating story, and it's a fascinating script. We get to know these young women, and you know, what do they do in the hours that they're not eating, and wondering if they're going to live or die after they taste what could or could not be or may not be poisoned food.
Yeah, imagine that. Imagine you're sitting and eating, and if somebody was trying to kill Hitler, you were going first. In fact, you were going, and he wasn't. That had to be terrifying. Although I suppose they maybe ate a little bit better than most, right? Because most people were not fed anything back then, so they had that. I know New York Theater Review called this nothing short of breathtaking, and I imagine this is fantastic. When I was reading about the series, though, I began to think you were doing sort of a World War II flavored history series of some sort, because you get Wiesenthal followed by Hitler's Tasters, but that's going to take a real break with the next show we're going to talk about in a second. But before we get to that, was there something thematic about it, or is it almost coincidence that these two shows, different of course, but from the same period of time in terms of the history they addressed, is that coincidence or is it planned?
Yeah, it's truly coincidental. I suppose if we were it'd be more likely to not do it than to do it if we were planning a three-show series. It just literally fell into the schedule, and just a coincidence. And the two plays, even though they touch on and deal with World War II history, they're so different. You know, they're very different plays.
Very much so. And then, of course, we really take a turn away from all of this with the next show, which I have to say, when we talk about this, listeners are going to be excited, and I'm going to do more with this. And I don't know if you even know this, Michael, but I will be doing a podcast interview with the star of this next show coming up just before the show opens. And that's going to be, I should say, Hitler's Tasters, July 5th to the 14th. But then a couple days later on the 16th, in comes one of my favorite performers to do a show called My Life on a Diet. Tell listeners who's coming to the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts, because it's great.
So it's a great comedian, Renee Taylor, who is also one of my favorites. I've seen her on stage before here in Chicago. In fact, she was at this building about 10 years or so ago.
With her late husband.
Late husband, exactly, in the Broadway play It Had to Be You. Well, this is My Life on a Diet. And Renee Taylor holds court, as only she can, and tells about all of her you know, decades of fad diets and some of the celebrities that came with those fad diets or promoted those fad diets, as well as just friends that she has known over the years. I mean, she was in acting class with Marilyn Monroe. I mean, you know, she goes back a ways. She was in Mel Brooks' original film, The Producers. You know, she's won Emmys for writing, and it's just an extraordinary career and many, many, many stories to tell.
And by the way, I mean, young people, everybody knows the show The Nanny, so I don't even care if you don't know the movies, the famous movies she did and all the work she did with Joe Bologna, her husband, but you got to know The Nanny, where she played the mom.
Right, exactly.
She was great.
No, she's wonderful, and I always enjoy so much seeing these comedians, these actors that have been, you know, honing their craft for so long, and there's just nothing like, to me, there's nothing like a comedic actor doing their thing and doing it so well. I mean, she's one of those people that, you know, she can raise her eyebrow and it's funny, you know.
Now, does she is based on her experience and her life. Is it, to your knowledge, is it sort of interactive with the audience, or is it just kind of we're sitting back and just watching her have a good time?
I think we mostly sit back and watch her have a good time, and we laugh along with her. I can't say for certain that she doesn't pose a question or two, but to the best of my knowledge, it's a scripted show. It's based on her book. She has a book of the same title. And so, and before Joe Bologna passed away, and that's only been about a year ago, he wrote it with her and directed the play, and it also played in New York last year. And it's played, I think they've taken it out to L.A., and there was one other engagement somewhere, and now it's coming to Chicago.
Wow. And by the way, one of the movies, favorite movies I had that she was in, you might be too young for this, but Jerry Lewis's The Errand Boy. She was in that one. And what an incredible career she's had. Again, The Nanny alone put her on so many people's maps, as one of the funniest actresses around. Emmy nominated for that role, by the way. So that's July 16th through August 4th. And again, coming up on a future podcast just before she opens here, Renee's going to join me right here on the podcast. So we're going to get to have a good time together before she comes to the theater. And then, you know, let's take a moment, Michael, because you have these three summer shows in your small space, but just briefly let folks know what else they might see at North Shore Center for the Performing Arts coming up in the coming months.
Well, yeah, even in July in our main theater, we have the Righteous Brothers are coming in on July 19th. So that the both theaters stay busy. Come fall, we have Keb Mo, the blues artist Keb Mo, who has been here before and always puts on a fantastic show. Nice comedy series this fall, beginning with Lewis Black in September 26 and 27. And then we bring in Ryan Hamilton in October, Dimitri Martin in November. So we're always big on comedy. We just put the Capitol Steps on sale. They come every January to the North Shore Center, and that just went on sale about a week ago. And that's not till January, but we always love having them. And then music, Judy Collins will be here in October. And then two of my personal favorites, Chicago natives, Liz Calloway and Ann Hampton Calloway, will be here in December doing a show. So we keep the place busy, very diverse types of shows, try to find something for everybody along the way.
Well, I was going to ask you, because obviously being in Skokie, which is not that far away, as I said, I grew up there, I'm up there all the time. And that being said, do you view the theater in Chicago, whether it's the Broadway in Chicago stuff or it's the Steppenwolf and the Looking Glass and the Goodman and the Victory Gardens, do you see those as even competition, or is it a matter of, no, we're just all part of the family, and you'll see shows there and you'll pop up and see shows here, and for that matter, up to Glencoe and see the Writers Theater. Y'all get along as operators of the Great Chicago Theater Network?
I would say we all most definitely get along, and we, you know, in the arts community, whether you're professionals on the business side like me or you're the performers, I mean, it's a big community, but at the same time, it's a small, we call it a big family in a small community. You know, people know each other and they're friendly, and they might work in one place for a while and another place for a while. You know, that said, you know, the audience, there's only so many audience members out there, and there's, you know, a lot a lot to choose from. So certainly, you know, we might have a show here and say, you know, darn, we're up against something at Symphony Center, and I wish that was on a different night because we would maybe sell a few more tickets to our show. That does happen. There's just a lot. It's a big city, a lot going on, and that's what makes it so fantastic to live in Chicago is you have all these choices. You know, our audiences come from all over. I mean, you mentioned how it's not that far. It really isn't that far. And we bring, I'd say probably 30% of our audience, you know, have a Chicago zip code because, you know, at the south end of Skokie is Howard Street and Toohey and, you know, these right. Chicago streets, right? So we're not that far out of the city. And, you know, of course, traffic can be your friend or foe, but it can be 20 minutes or it can be 45 minutes to downtown. It just depends on the variables of the Edens and the Kennedy, but it's really not that far. And we bring people into this building from all over.
And the plus side is, you know, being up there right where you're located there, essentially at Skokie Boulevard and Golf. I mean, you've got the, I'll always call it the Old Orchard Shopping Center. I don't even know what it's called anymore, probably West Town, whatever. But to me, it's the Old Orchard Shopping Center where I grew up. And you've got restaurants up and down Skokie Boulevard. Actually, there used to be a movie theater there called the Old Orchard Theater. That was my job for,
yes,
I was an usher there, then the manager
years,
right across the street. And I think the Arby's is still there, right?
No, there's no Arby's.
Oh, really?
IHOP is there. Yes, IHOP's right across the street from us, and you know where the movie theater is. They have Portillo's now, and
yeah,
there's a few other businesses in that little area. But we won't starve in Skokie. I can promise anybody that wants to come see a show here, there are plenty of places, all different price points and food types and so on within walking distance. And in fact, it's nice for visiting performers here. If anybody that's here for any length of time, even a couple of days, you know, we have a hotel next door, the DoubleTree right next door, where we oftentimes artists will stay. And then within walking distances, again, you have all these restaurants, you got shopping, you know, even the grocery store and the, you know, it's a very good place to be. It's not the boondocks by any means.
Not to mention Baker Square if you want some good pie, because I don't think you can get that in the city. I don't think we have them around. That's always a stop for me when I'm up there as well. By the way, I'll give you a little piece of trivia. That Arby's I'm talking about?
Yeah.
If I have it right, that is where Rahm Emanuel worked. And that, I believe, is where he had that accident where he lost part of that finger. Right there, right across the street at that Arby's.
Really? Though that is trivia that I did not know.
Who would except me?
Well, so,
but all that aside, you do not want to miss these incredible shows coming to the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. Wiesenthal from the June 26th to June 30th, and then followed by Hitler's Tasters July 5th to the 14th. And then, of course, we will talk again later with Renee Taylor about her great show, My Life on a Diet, which I think she wrote with Joseph Balonis. She wrote with
Correct.
Him. So, yeah, so that's just going to be so great. I can't wait. You can get tickets for all these things and check out the theater at northshorecenter.org. Center is spelled T-E-R. I always argue for the T-R-E ending to go London with it, but that's me. So North Shore Center, C-E-N-T-E-R.org is where you want to check everything out and get your tickets. Don't miss it. Michael Paulkin, thanks for the great work you do up there. It's a favorite place of mine to get up to, and I'll look forward to seeing some of these things coming up, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Paul. Really appreciate it.
All right. Check them out, northshorecenter.org. Thank you, Michael.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.